joining us now on the line. He's an NHL writer for Sportsnet, Mr. Luke Fox. Luke, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Luke, what was your initial reaction when you heard the term and the AVV of Mitch Marner's contract?
I thought the Leafs won on term and Marner won on the AAV. And I thought, holy cow, he's getting paid like he's a UFA, even though he's an RFA. You know, they only bought 2 years of unrestricted free agency. But Pal Dubas, you know, stuck to his word. He said that he was going to get all four of these guys signed and locked up, and he did that. So here's your team. It's full of really dynamic, in their prime forwards, and a goaltender that's fantastic, one defenseman that'll be locked up for at least the next 3 years that's fantastic. You got to go win a cup now, and you have to do it in a way that it hasn't really been done before in terms of committing that much of your cap space to forwards and so little to the blue line.
You talked about, you know, this is the time to win a cup. Where do we think their window to win is now? So Marner's got 6 years. Matthews has five. Nylander was, did he get six?
Yeah.
So he's got 5 years left.
Right.
So is this window 5 years, or is it even less than that because of the Morgan Riley factor?
Because you think he's gone after three?
No, because I think that he might just cost them too much money.
Well, yeah, but I think they've identified him as a core piece, and they'll keep him even if it means moving on from someone else. And yeah, it's a risky thing. Kyle Dubas is banking on the salary cap going up in a couple of years, like taking a sudden jolt with the U.S. TV money and hopefully get gambling revenues and labor peace. And he's banking on a spike in terms of the cap ceiling. And hopefully that spike happens right around the time Morgan is due. Otherwise, you know, he has to move someone. I mean, that's William Nylander in 3 years. But that's kind of tomorrow's problem. I saw the deal that was made on Friday night to deal with today and give Mike Babcock the best chance to win a Stanley Cup with this group right now in 2020.
Luke, is that bad management banking on the salary cap going up? Is that just a risk that's maybe too great? Because, Luke, I can't trust the NHL enough to get things right and the salary cap to substantially rise. It was supposed to go up, what, $2 or $3 million this year? It didn't. It barely went up. Is that something that you can't bank on or look forward to with your payroll just to bank on the NHL to do all of this right? Because I don't think I can trust them enough to do so.
Well, the salary cap always goes up. You're right. It may not go up a lot, like as was the case this year. And Kyle would have knowledge about what the players are trying to do. And they're trying to keep it low, make the how much cap rises in the next couple of years low to lower escrow. And yeah, it's a bit of a gamble, but it's an educated gamble that the new revenue coming in from the U.S. deals, which may come from not just NBC, but NBC and ESPN. You know, there's talk of them splitting up how they divide the rights. Maybe some will be digital, some will be over the air. There's lots of different things they can do to try and maximize how much revenue they get from that. They're hoping to sell, a million Seattle jerseys when that team expands, and then they're getting gate revenue from the Seattle team. And then it's kind of a guessing game, but they're hoping there's a little bump from the gambling revenue too. So it's an educated guess that it will go up in the next 2 or 3 years. But, you know, the other gamble is what? Not signing your young talent. I mean, I don't know what else he could have done. He could have not pursued John Tavares, but, you know, what Leaf fan wasn't excited on that day that, you know, they won the bidding war for a hometown hero like him? It's just what makes it really interesting is no one's done what he's trying to do, which is have three guys making eight figures and cutting out the middle class and trying to fill in the fringes with guys that are less than $1 million.
Luke, I agree with you. Of course, to me, Mitch Marner right now is the best player on the team, and a lot of people disagree with me with that statement, but I think he's the engine of the team right now, today. Mitch Marner is what makes the Maple Leafs go, but you're right. He had no choice, but isn't this some of this his own doing? He did the situation with William Nylander. He didn't have to cave into William Nylander and gave this demands. Didn't that, the William Nylander situation and how that was handled, didn't that pave the way for a five-year deal potentially for Matthews and a six-year deal for Mitch Marner when we see the best player on the planet, Connor McDavid, sign an eight-year deal and he's locked in Edmonton forever? Isn't this kind of Dubas's own doing here a little bit?
It's on Dubas and it's on the player. You know, I actually had a chance to talk to Connor this summer and ask if he was ever, did he even think about trying to go shorter term? And he was like, no, you know, he didn't want to miss us, even be having him talked about missing a day of training camp. He wanted the maximum amount of term. He wanted security. And some guys are like that, you know, they want the knowledge that even if they get hurt, they're going to get their money. You know, these young Leafs have been bold. You know, William Nylander willing to sit out till December 1st. I mean, that's an aggressive play. It's showing a lot of confidence on these guys that they're willing to push it to this limit. So, yeah, some of it's on Dubas and some of it's on the player. You know, I like Dubas's candor when he was addressing the media after signing Marner and saying that, yeah, I've made mistakes. There's things I'd like to do over. And he has not, you know, covered the fact that he thinks he handled the Nylander situation poorly, you know. And it's easy for us on the outside side to say, you know, what if Lou is still in charge? There's no way that was going to December 1st. And you're probably right. But he's a young GM and he's trying to learn from his mistakes. And I like that he's been honest enough to at least say, I've made some mistakes and I'm going to try and learn from them.
You mentioned Nylander and his contract situation. And now that we're, you know, basically whatever it is, 10 months out of that or 9 months out of that situation, he gets a full camp this year. He's going to be playing with Matthews. Do you expect that he takes that next step forward from the guy that we saw a couple of years ago that looked like he was on the precipice of being, you know, that guy, that his running mate with Austin Matthews, and he was going to be the guy that puts up 90 points playing alongside Matthews? Do you think that we're going to see that? And how much of his success depends on not having as much pressure as he did last year coming back?
Yeah, he just seems like a completely new guy. The couple times I've talked to him, and I think, you know, the world's helped. You know, he really struggled here playing for the Maple Leafs after he finally got his deal done. It got in his head, and then, you know, he missed it, a few golden chances, and he never got in a rhythm. And he didn't play that well. He was trying to catch up to a league that was off and running 2 months ahead of him. And, you know, he probably thought, I'm a young, talented athlete. I've always excelled in any league I've been in. I can probably catch up. And it was probably a dose of reality that just how important, you know, being part of the team and playing at that high pace is. But I think the world was really good for him. The fact that he was a superstar over there. Of course, it's not fully best on best, but there are a lot of the world's greatest players over there, and he stood out. And I think that helped his confidence. And I think, you know, being partnered with Austin Matthews in these practices that started a week before camp, and, you know, no one's really talking about him. All the focus has been on Mitch, and maybe to a lesser extent, some of the new bodies and new faces in camp. I think it's going to really free him up. And also last year, he was bumped all around the lineup. Babcock didn't know what to do with him because he tried him with Matthews, but he wasn't up to speed. So he'd bump him down, and he tried to bump him back up to get him going. I think the fact that they're going to start game one together is going to be huge. And I would expect a nice bounce back season for sure.
NHL writer for Sportsnet, Luke Fox, joining us here, Sportsnet Tonight, Matt and George on the Sportsnet Radio Network. You brought up the name Mike Babcock. And to me, it's all about what this team does in the playoffs. The Atlantic Division got better in the offseason, and it's what this team can do and the head coach come the playoffs. Haven't won a playoff series in 15 years. Is there any chance they potentially look at a coaching change during the season if this team hits a big-time slump, or you expect this guy to be the head coach of this team into the playoffs, and if he doesn't get out of the first round, maybe even out of the second round, it could be curtains for Mike Babcock in Toronto.
I think if he doesn't get out of the first round, I think that's the benchmark. If he fails to do that, no matter what odds are stacked against them or what the draw is, if it's Tampa or Boston, they have a fabulous regular season. I think if the Leafs lose in the first round again, I think it's time to mix it up. And I believe that's I would imagine that's Kyle's plan, especially since he gave a nice hefty extension to keep Sheldon Keefe in the organization. And we know they're tight. As far as making a change in season, I think it would have to be a disaster. Like, I think the slump, they would have to be tumbling way out of the race. I think they give this group a chance with Mike as head coach, a legitimate chance to make another run in the playoffs. I think you never say never, but I think things would really have to fly off the rails. Plus, I think some of Kyle's moves, you know, getting everyone in, including Mitch, in camp, I think that, and also finally giving Babcock his lefty-righty combination where there was some sort of passive-aggressive comments made about, you know, Jake Muzzin's a great player, but he holds his stick the wrong way, essentially what he was saying. And now they have a top four with two natural righties and two natural lefties. He's provided the best, like this, a really incredible roster talent-wise, and now they have the experience of losing, and hopefully that steals them and makes them realize and wake up what you need to do to stomp on the throat and eliminate a team. So I think, you know, he has at least another shot to make a deep run.
Luke, you're talking about the righty lefty combinations for this Leaf defense and the acquisitions that they've made. They brought in Jake Muzzin last year. They brought in Cody Ceci and Tyson Berry this offseason and to a lesser extent, Ben Harper. How do you see this Leaf defense shaking out? Is it good enough to be able to compete with the high-powered, you know, offensive teams like the Bruins and the Lightning? And then there's going to be teams like Florida who are going to take a step forward, you would think. So is this team built the way that Mike Babcock wants it defensively? Or do you think that as the season goes along, there could be some room to maybe solidify that back end?
Well, I don't see where the room is because there's a big donut beside the available cap space. So what you have is what you get unless you trade some salary. So you're looking at trading out a Johnsson or a Kapanen or a Nylander. Like you'd have to cut deep. You have to subtract some salary if you're going to add midway through. That's the other kind of interesting thing about this group here is there won't be a nice deadline rental without someone going out. So what you see is what you get. Now, that said, I really like their top four. I'd put it up there among the better top fours in the East just because Morgan Rielly and Tyson Berry are two of the top offensive breakout defensemen, you know, power play defenseman in the whole league. If you go by points in the last 2 years, total points, they're two of the top six in the NHL, and they're both on the same team. And I think it gives the Leafs a different look, too, because right now the plan is to pair Rielly and CeCe and Muzzin and Barry, and that way you've got one sort of stay-at-home guy with one more rushing defenseman hop up in the play, be that fourth forward. But it at least this gives them an option, say they're down a goal, and Babcock hasn't said he'll do this, but just in my mind, he has this option, is to put Rielly and Barry together. And you have a lefty and a righty who can both create offense. It just allows them to give a wider array of looks to the opposition who want to keep dumping it into the right side and preying on the weaker half. I think it's a much better looking top four. Now they got to stay healthy, and they probably got to play a lot of minutes.
Luke, before I let you go, we're opening up the phone lines to the callers. With this new, big, shiny new Mitch Marner contract extension, who has more pressure on them for Mitch to perform up to the contract in year one? Is it Mitch Marner or Kyle Dubas?
That's a great question. I would probably say Mitch more than Kyle. I mean, Kyle definitely has pressure, but I think what he's done, what he can do, and I think, if anything, he shifted the pressure to Babcock and to the players. And I found it really intriguing that Mitch brought up the fact that, you know, the day before he signed, he was just walking his dog in the park and some 13-year-old kid sees him and starts yelling at him, wondering when he's going to sign. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the contract offer leak of 7 times 11 came out and then in short order, a deal got done. I think he was feeling the fan pressure turn on him. You got to remember, this guy has been the fan favorite. He's at least locally, he's been the guy in terms of, you know, giving sticks to kids, and you see smiling pictures of him with the mascot, and he's been a local hero. Like, you know, he's the fun loving Mitchell Marner. And all of a sudden, there started to be this, whispering, or at least online, some little vitriol towards him, towards his family, towards his agent, that they were being greedy. And I think that got to him. I mean, he's human. So I think the pressure will be on him to perform, but he's kind of the guy that, I don't know, I wouldn't expect this to hinder him, especially since he's back in camp now.
Luke Fox is an NHL writer for Sportsnet. Luke, thanks for doing this, pal.
Okay, thanks for having me. Have a great night, guys.